Hello and welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May.
I'm Clinton.
Hello, Clinton.
Hello, hello, hello.
We're coming to you from quarantine day. I think we're in the second week.
Yeah, maybe I would say we're about to begin the third.
Yeah, personally. Maybe.
Yeah.
The date that I choose is March 12th because that was when everything was canceled for me.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, days sure. No longer have numeric
or time meaning. Yeah, I've been, because I've also still been teaching online overnight as well. I woke up at like 1 and you were supposed to come over at 3 and I was like, no.
Whoa, you woke up at 1 p.m
That's actually pretty early.
Wow. So you teach in the online classes?
I have been. I've been doing it for a few years, so
yeah. But I thought you had stopped for a bit.
I had stopped for a bit, but remember the coronavirus hit China first. So weirdly, I actually had about like a month where I was both working like full-time overnight and also working my university job. And then I was going to cut back, but then the virus hit here. And it's funny, I've had a lot of friends that know I do this want to sign up now. And the company I do it with is like automatically rejecting people because there's just too many people now doing it.
Really? They got too many people who can have the time.
Who has the time now?
Teach classes online. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So I've been doing that a bit. Not every day though, because I have some news. I got into the PhD program at GMU. And so I've also got a really great scholarship. So I've also been trying to like balance, you know, trying to make a little bit of money while also trying to use this time to start some things.
Yeah. Start some what?
No, it's just start my, like, you'll see that bag over there. I'm pointing to a bag with a bunch of office supplies.
All I see is cat toys.
I mean, that too. But that's going to turn into my PhD board. Hopefully, I get to spend the summer in Puerto Rico still.
To do
research for building a Puerto Rican cinema archive.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it'll be really exciting. I'm actually, now we can say that a PhD candidate
yes.
is running this.
Yes. Podcast. All right. Is that what you are, a PhD candidate, even when you start your work? Like, or start
yes.
your schooling?
So yeah. You're technically, someone correct me, but you're technically not a PhD. You're called a PhD candidate. Like, you're basically applying for candidacy, but I mean, I'm in the system. I have my, it'll probably be like 5 years, but I'm really excited because
that's super exciting.
I applied with wanting to do research in genre cinema, which is the basis of this podcast, in Puerto Rico and Iran. And I've been kind of like whittling it away to want to now build a Puerto Rican archive of cinema, which doesn't exist currently. And also dabbling into studies with Iranian genre cinema.
Hell,
what about your quarantine? Yeah. Tell us everything.
Oh, my quarantine, as you know, I have a wife and 2 kids now. So, which is a season 2 bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great. We're doing a lot of Disney Plus. I can report that the kids love just about anything, you know, for a few episodes, and then they're on to something else. The SpongeBob movie gets a lot of play at my house.
Yeah, is that Disney?
It's you know, they kind of own everything, so maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
The kids know how to find it, so it's either Disney or Netflix, or maybe even HBO Go. Sometimes I see them in the HBO Go section, and then I gotta kind of, you know, be like, wait a second,
HBO Go too.
Have you watched Avenue 5?
No, I haven't. You know what I started watching?
Okay, well, first of all, I would highly recommend Avenue 5.
What's Avenue 5?
It's a comedy in space with House, the Dr. House guy.
Oh, I don't like him.
No, well, you might like this show. This show is
maybe
super good. But anyway, what are you watching?
I started watching The Righteous Gemstones.
I love that show too.
It is incredible.
Yeah,
mad that no one has suggested it to me before. Because
I may have. But no one else had, so it probably didn't, you know, like, elevate to the level of something that someone remembered.
It is so dark and funny, and I love satirical Jesus things.
Yeah.
And I love Danny McBride.
You know, and this is my main complaint with most Danny McBride is that he's usually too far out there, but this makes him bring it back a little bit, I think. Makes him play a little bit more of a...
It is very consistent. I will say I kind of get what you mean, where sometimes like a Danny McBride thing is just Danny McBride being like, I'm Danny McBride.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's helping him here, but it like John Goodman's really good.
Goodman is so good in it.
Yeah. I usually don't like Adam Devine or Divine. Divine. Or whatever the fuck.
Please.
Yeah, I usually
put some respect on his name.
I think of Adam Levine. Yeah, and it's spelled the same way except one. So okay, I'm sorry.
It could be Divine. I'm not sure.
Either way,
yeah.
I usually don't like him, but this one is pretty good too. Are the other Workaholics eventually on it?
I'm gonna say no.
Okay.
I also didn't finish it. I have a couple slight beefs with it, but. Overall, very, very good.
Yeah. I tried to watch Westworld.
Okay.
I don't know.
First season?
I don't understand how anyone fucking watches that show.
Okay. Too much? Too far?
It was... I just don't...
Too Lynchian?
Not even Lynchian.
I don't even know what that
it's
means.
Nolan. It's Jonathan Nolan, okay. Who is Chris Nolan's brother and also who helped write Memento. And
yeah.
It's very Nolan in the sense that things just happen and then they expect you to. And then when I ask other people who have suggested Westworld to me, they're like, oh, don't worry. You're supposed to be confused for 8 episodes, but then you get it in the 9th. And I hate things like that.
Yeah.
I might go back to it because the premise is interesting, mm-hmm. but. Goddamn, Westworld.
It was a little too shooty for me. A little too... Because if the premise is that you're in a simulation kind of thing and you can get shot in the head like 1,000 times, then they on HBO, they're going to shoot you in the head over and over and over. And at some point, I thought, you know what?
That logic also still doesn't make sense to me. That's because that was when I was like, wait, but how do they get there? How is that able to happen?
Right.
And it just like... I stopped at the 4th episode and I was like, I'm going to have to watch one of those YouTube explanation videos to continue.
Oh, yeah.
And
of which there are plenty, I'm sure.
Yeah. But let's actually talk about something.
Okay. Okay.
Related.
Okay.
Let's talk about Tiger King.
Yes.
So Clinton told me about a week ago. He was like, have you seen Tiger King yet? And I had seen it popped up. And I usually support everything that everyone likes, but sometimes it's just like, it takes me a while to do it because I hate being like I still haven't finished the Gabriel Fernandez stuff and whatever. But Clinton's actually really picky. So I was like, okay,
that's true.
I'm going to sit down and watch it. My God. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. So Tiger King is about... exotic animal breeders, like people that have these big roadside zoos.
And that's how Clinton first pitched it to me.
Yeah.
And me, without knowing anything, I was like, oh no, that sounds too sad. That makes me very depressed.
Yeah.
And Clinton was like, maybe watch it. Yeah. Maybe wait and see to watch it. And now I know what it means. Because
that's just kind of like, these are the jobs of the characters.
Yeah,
but
the last 15 minutes made me super sad, but
really?
Otherwise I do agree that it is almost the backdrop, and that's also why the last 15 minutes are kind of super sad, because it kind of brings it all back to, remember, this is about animals, and no one in the series gives a fuck about the animals, and that's true.
Well, I will, without getting too in the weeds, I do think there are better actors, better people in the conservation world than others, but in any case super fun. Even just the trailer and like the first few minutes are like, holy mackerel. And then there are other twists that come around too.
Yeah.
And as far as I think, solely based on, it's worth it even just based on these are real people who are better characters than you could ever make up.
I know. You couldn't.
Yeah.
Really could. That was one
down
thing.
To
I
the
was
way
like...
they dress, down to the way they look. Yeah.
because every episode kind of has its own theme. Uh-huh. It's seven episodes. And already when documentary series are that long, I get a little bit tired.
Same.
The Gabriel Fernandez one, I don't know if I'll ever finish. It's eight episodes. It's the little kid that was abused on Netflix.
He was abused on Netflix?
The series is on Netflix.
Okay.
And the little kid, he was abused by his family for like years.
Yeah.
There's nothing light about it.
Yeah.
But don't fuck with cats.
That was the one that really probably.
But that was only three episodes.
Yeah, but that was three episodes?
That was three episodes.
God, that felt like.
It was tough.
Yeah.
But I was able to watch it because it was
I can't believe you watched that.
I had to walk away during 25% of it, mm-hmm. which was mostly the first episode. The first episode was really tough. But then after that, it just got into the dude and the investigation team or whatever. Anyway, when I saw this was seven episodes, I'm like, how can you stretch this? But every single episode is crazy. Like that first episode, I'm all like, fuck yeah, Carol. Tell him.
Yeah.
I was so pro
Carol.
See,
I'm still pro Carol after all.
She killed her husband, okay?
No, she didn't.
She did.
I disagree. I think
you're the only person in the world that thinks that she didn't kill her husband.
I think
she killed her husband.
Her handyman said
she's an asshole.
Or his handyman said, if I pull this off, I'm going to be the slickest man in the world or something,
which is the exact thing
you say when you,
I'm sorry,
before you fake your death and then fly away.
She killed him because, she was also I mean, I completely agree that Joe Exotica was next level insane.
Yeah.
But as the series went on, he was making more and more sense.
No.
And I think the only thing
he burned down his studio.
That is literally the.
He killed all those alligators.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know? I completely agree. It's fucked up.
But sorry, these are big spoilers.
I'm sorry if you're listening.
Yeah.
Just watch it anyway. Yeah. No, but actually, I do think that it was something darker in her that wanted to go after him for all that money. And I'm just like, and not trying to make this a gender thing, even though obviously gender, we can look at Tiger King through a gender perspective as well. It is a little suspicious to me that she just kept going after him after it was clear that he had no recourse to keep going after her.
What do you mean? She kept going after him.
Yeah, for the money. He went after his family and things like that. And I'm not trying to defend Joe Exotica because what he did was fucked up. But Carol definitely killed her husband.
No.
And I mean, she kept those animals in cages as well. And
yeah, they would say that, but I think they were, I think they were big, right? It was like acres and acres.
No, they weren't bigger. They were small, as small as Joe Exotica's ones. You need a review.
I watched it pretty closely.
I watched it too. I watched it more recently than you.
I watched it with a magnifying glass.
There's no hero in that series, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you got Carol, and then they're really after that.
No, I don't think that Carol is not the hero. But definitely.
The hero is the smoking TV producer with the hat who's just a perfect character.
Yeah. Oh my god. Everyone. everyone. Rick is pretty insane. Fucking Doc Antle. Oh,
Doc
further
Antle.
Proof
yeah.
that Carol is not a hero. She completely said the Netflix documentary is bullshit and that she's looking into suing the filmmaker.
I'm not super surprised,
but that is not the tone of someone who has hearts.
You know what though? I did think that it was a little dirty that so Joe Exotica reads her diary to all on his live stream or whatever, and they show him reading her diary, and so you read a lot of her diary or you see that, and I felt like as a documentary filmmaker I thought that was a little dirty.
I actually disagree because I feel like the only winner in this whole thing is actually probably the filmmaker. I remember, I don't know if you remember how the series starts out, but he starts out saying, I started making this, and this is the very first line we hear in the entire series, and it's from the documentarian. And already when that happens, mm-hmm. I'm already prepping in, because usually documentarians don't like to insert themselves in the narrative.
I know.
But in this case, right away. And I, looking back, mm-hmm. I think that that was one of the smartest things he did, because he was like, I started doing this 5 years ago wanting to make a documentary on reptile hunters.
Yeah.
And then I met Joe Exotica. And that's actually the last time we hear from him. I kept thinking that maybe
he's in a little bit here and there, peppered in.
Mostly asking questions. He never introduces himself like he does in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's smart?
Because, I mean, one, it removes him, but two, it also just sets...
The intro. Why the intro?
Well...
Why? Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it, like, removes him from the narrative and also introduces, like, this is going to be something that I didn't even anticipate. And that's mm-hmm. reflected throughout everything. Like, yeah, he got a bunch of stuff that Joe did, but he also got a bunch of footage from Carol, and he also got a bunch of footage from the Scarface guy and everything. And I feel like... He just presented, after that intro, he never inserted himself in mm-hmm. his opinion again, other than just presenting the stuff. And as a documentarian, that is what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the footage speaks for itself.
For sure.
Doc Antle is threatening to sue him. Carol is threatening to sue him.
Of course, Doc Antle. That guy's...
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's what I mean. Like, when you have supremely pissed off almost everyone in your documentary, that means that you to me, that means that you told the truth.
The one other problematic thought or memory was when he describes meth mouth and how people, when they do a lot of meth, they can, like, lose their teeth, basically.
Yeah.
And then you see the shot of the person who has no teeth. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does a big smile. And I thought... Oh, he's such a sympathetic person. He's such a seemingly
nice
person.
I don't find anyone in the documentary.
But I just thought that was a cheap shot. It was like, okay. I could have put that together. I didn't need you to give me like a zoom in, big smile while, you know, someone else is talking about meth mouth or whatever.
I don't think so. I think that this was a documentary full of a bunch. I'm
suing the director of Tiger King.
I think that it brings about a lot of ethical questions, but I actually think that the documentary handled it as best as they could. If anything, the thing that I wish that they had stepped in more to do was protect the animals, but I also understand that, I don't know, that's where it gets... I really think that the last 15 minutes of the documentary really summed it up. That it's just like this crazy story where no one really actually cared about animals, and a woman definitely killed her husband. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it happened.
Speaking of which, we're going to talk about other movies where women kill their husbands.
Yeah. To now bring it to what today is about. For March is Women's International Month.
Okay.
And so in the beginning of the month, I told Clinton that I wanted to do a woman director focused episode. And so that's mm-hmm. what we'll be doing today.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so we looked at four films. Mm-hmm. We looked at Janie, which was released in 1970. We looked at Blood Diner, which is 1987. Mirror Mirror, which is 1990. And Good Manners, which is 2017.
Woo woo! Let's go, women. Team woman. Stand up.
Yeah. How did you enjoy watching these films?
I mostly love them. And some I didn't care for too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But some of these movies were more up my alley than a normal podcast watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
These are in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it was a very interesting mix. I hadn't seen most of them either. These were films that I did a lot of research for, and I kind of wanted to get films that kind of represented eras. So Janie is very exploitation. Blood Diner is very like schlocky 80s slasher. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mirror Mirror is a direct-to-video 1990s movie. And then to bring us to the modern day, Good Manners is a 2017 Brazilian film. And I feel like these were all really interesting examples of female creative voices. And yeah. most of these films were actually created with a lot of female crew and things like that. And I think in some ways you can really tell, and in other ways it's also kind of surprising. So I'm really intrigued to get into it.
Me too.
All right, you just want to get started?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so up first is 1970s Janie, directed by Roberta Findlay.
This girl is no fun. She's as stupid as the rest of them. Think, Janie, think. What are you doing with her? What can you do to her to make her realize how stupid she is? She'll do anything for you. You can make her do anything. Get her to make love to a man while you watch. She'll hate it, but she'll do it. You'll make her do it.
All right, and so that was Janie, directed by Roberta Findlay. It was released in 1970. Technically, still on IMDb, the directed creditor is Jack Braffman, but will be...
The directed creditor?
The credited director.
Thank you.
Is Jack Braffman, but we'll get into...
Yeah, I messaged you right away.
Yeah, because you did your research. I'm so proud of you.
I messaged you when I started watching it, and I thought... Okay. Yes. And I thought, well, this doesn't look like it's from the female gaze.
So do you want me to explain that now?
It says it's directed by Jack.
Okay. Yeah. I'll explain that now. So Roberta Findlay is actually a renowned sexploitation director. She did a ton of films in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and she was married to this other sexploitation director called Michael Findlay. And so the whole story about Janie and the credit. So to give some background to Jack Braffman, who is... the credited director, he's the one that actually broke the bubble, so to speak, about who directed it. And he did it...
Who did that? Sorry.
Jack Braffman. Yeah, the credited director.
Oh.
He's the one. So in 2018...
He said for real.
Yeah, in 2018, yeah. I strongly suggest anyone listening to this, look up this interview, because it is actually a fascinating interview about someone that made a lot of money making a lot of very weird films in New York City and a time and space that I don't think can ever be replicated again. Mm-hmm. But essentially, Jack Braffman, he was this kid from New York. Well, kid, relatively speaking, he grew up in New York in the 40s and he grew up there, and he was always intrigued by film, but, you know, never got into it and blah, blah, blah. And then one day he was working for a photography studio and they closed down. And so back in the 50s, 60s, you could just go to the unemployment office in New York. And he went to the unemployment office in New York and they gave him a job being a film booker for MGM Studios.
What?
Yeah, just for going to the unemployment office.
Oh my goodness.
I know, right? I was like, fuck off. If that could happen now.
That's amazing.
And essentially, so this was in the 60s. And what he, so just getting that job, he was able to learn about making films. And also being a film booker, that meant that he knew theater owners. And so this was starting to get into the turn of the 60s and the 70s. And exploitation cinema, sex cinema was really popular, especially in underground theaters. And back then, New York was really known for those underground theaters. So what he did, Jack Braffman, is he would just make a bunch of cheap films. He would call his friends saying, hey, can you get me the theater in Times Square on this date? I have a film that we can make and we can screen it for one night. And they would just make their money that way. And so that is kind of how the exploitation slash sexploitation era in New York worked. And so Jack Braffman was one of those dudes. As a result, he met the Findlays, Michael and Roberta. Michael and Roberta kind of had the same deal in a way where they had been working with all of these bunch of creatives in New York, specifically making sex films. And they would make them quickly. They would make them cheaply. They would book it through a friend. They would have like one night in Times Square. And that would be enough to make quite a bit of bank, especially if they were able to, you know, create a system for it. Mm-hmm. And so Jack, Michael, and Roberta kind of became this trio of directors. And so as per Jack's own words, he says that Janie was the first film that Roberta directed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what was it the wasn't reason the for first... putting his name on it? Was she...
He doesn't go into detail into it, but he what he does say in that part of the interview that I read, and to repeat, you can read it all on Rialto Report. Just look up Jack Bravman, Rialto Report. It's an interview from March 2018. What he said when he explains it is that they had already been making films in the late 60s.
Okay.
Alone in 69 to 1970, they made four films and Janie was the last one. Mm-hmm. And Janie was the one that Roberta directed. But when he was talking about how the films would work, he just said that they would trade off roles. So, and this film, Roberta was director, but then he would direct another one and then she would do the sound. Her husband would do like script photography or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they just figure out kind of like a system.
Wow.
And that's a cool team. Janie, he credits Janie being the first one that she directed. Wow. And if you look at her other films, they're all very sexual and exploitative.
Okay.
So it definitely falls in line with her work. But
and she's not only the secret director of this movie, she's in the movie as well. Yeah,
she's in the movie as one of the lady lovers.
Lady lovers.
Yeah.
I always think that's so brave if you can be naked in your own movie.
She wasn't and naked. It's
not, I think she was. I think she was naked from the top.
No, I don't think she ever took off her top. Well, I was expecting the same. I actually was expecting her to take off her clothes, but Janie attacks her before her clothes are able to come off.
Isn't there a shaving scene? Isn't that the shaving scene, bathtub scene, something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, viewer.
Listen, I...
Listener.
Listener.
We this got a movie little... sucks.
No.
I hated this movie.
No, really?
I really hated it.
Really?
I almost like regretted telling... Though I didn't regret it after the fact because I was like, as much as I hate this movie, it is an artifact of its time.
Yes.
And I enjoyed Jack's interview more than I enjoyed the watching film. It.
This movie... Okay, so can we tell a viewer what it's about?
It's about a teenager because she's a teenager. Mm-hmm. In bed with like this 50-year-old guy.
Old man, yes.
That she only calls daddy. I had to Google if it was her real
it's
daddy.
It's very hard to decide who is the actual daddy in this
movie. Yes, yes, it's very hard. And then she kills people. Mm-hmm. But not only does she kill people, every single time she kills someone, what does she do?
She masturbates.
And they show and they it every do. Single time.
And they really try to give people, like, they try to mess you up because she's doing the business.
And then they're flashing back to
the gore. And it's like 70s gore, so it's not that bad. But it's still kind of
it's like
disturbing.
Nonsensical gore, too. Like, she will have stabbed the titty, but then the blood streak will be on the eye. And the titty's like bare.
And it's like the ketchup blood.
Oh my God, it was totally ketchup blood.
And there's just awesome psychedelic rock music playing.
Oh yeah. Honestly, it's a Lana Del Rey video.
Yes.
If you really just, it's 1 hour long.
The timing
long
is perfect. It's not even an hour and a half. It's
not even an hour and 10 minutes. It's an hour and 5 minutes.
Perfect length movie. My main beef is with the end of the movie. Because the whole time you're watching this like free love, gone insane thing, and she's killing all these lovers. And I think it has one of the best horror movie deaths, one of my favorite horror movie deaths.
Which one?
Where they're on the dock. And first of all, she's rolling around on a dock, which is the most bird shit ever. And it's something that could only happen in the 70s before they would think to like power wash the dock before they have that scene. And Well, I mean, why? It's like, you know, why do you go to see Jamie? You know? But then it's interesting, I think, because why you would go to see Janie, I'm guessing, is for the sexual pleasure of it. But then it's ruined every 8 minutes by the stabbing.
Dude, I actually don't think that that bothered people, though.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay, here's the breakdown of one of my favorite horror movie deaths of all time. It was when Janie just nonchalantly stabs this man on a dock, just stabs him with a knife, and then jumps up and down like, hooray, hooray! And it's like, just
it's so like ludicrous. A cheerleader being like, wee-hoo! So I don't think Roberta wrote it. Not that I think Roberta would write something better, honestly, because okay. I looked at her other films and I was like, oh, so this is like her thing.
Yeah.
Jack, basically...
So, Jack was like, this is my shit.
No, this is actually something kind of interesting. Jack said that even though Michael and Roberta were married, that mm-hmm. they acted very unmarried, and that Roberta spent her time when he met her, as well as all the time afterward, because eventually they did divorce, sleeping with all of the men on set.
With the men? I swear, I thought you were going to say
the
opposite. I thought
that she was going to be a lesbian. Yeah, same.
As the character on screen. Maybe she was bisexual. Maybe she wasn't.
So, like, it's a very long interview. Yeah. Janie's not the only thing mentioned. Uh-huh. But he basically goes through his career from the 60s to the 80s. And he never stopped working with Roberta. So he worked with Roberta through the end of the 80s. And he said, yeah, every single time, you know, she's nuts. But, you know, she's one of the best. And she would have a new boyfriend, sometimes two or three boyfriends per set.
Oh my goodness. Let's lift up this queen in National International Women's Month.
Yeah. I mean, Roberta, definitely, I feel like...
Move over, Bong Joon-ho. Our next episode is going to be a tribute.
Oh my God. You would probably love it.
I would. I want to talk about a one scene. That's all. That's, you know, that's all I got to... I just want to touch on.
What?
That threw me for such a curve. It's a scene where it's hard to watch because she sees, unlike the rest of the movie, she is spying. She kind of looks through the door, keyhole door kind of thing, and you see like an abusive father thing, like the father's abusing the mother is what it looks like.
I kind of remember that.
And so I'm thinking, okay, you know, okay, great, we get to see Janie go in and like kill the abusive father.
But that
and then that's
happen.
Not what happens.
Yeah.
And that threw me for such a loop.
She kills the mom, right?
She masturbates. Oh. And then she's like, ha 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 ha. And it's so insane that, and also.
I like how that, of all things, as soon as like, actually the first masturbation scene, I was like, okay, maybe that's just like an anomaly.
Yeah.
No.
Right. Exactly.
So as soon as I realized that was what was happening, I was like, okay, well, I have no other expectations for this movie. And it pretty much stayed.
If I could ask the director one question, it would be, who is the father? Is the father, was the father that abusive one?
I don't think the father ever existed.
No.
I don't.
Janie community, we deny except that answer.
I think the only people that have seen this movie are you, me, and like...
And some YouTubers.
30 dudes in New York.
Yeah.
Because, fun fact, listener, you can watch all of Janie up on YouTube, but otherwise...
You gotta really search.
did you find... I gave you the link.
Let's throw out some keywords. If you hadn't given me... I tried to find it a few minutes before the show, just to bring it back up. I couldn't even find it.
Yeah, because I don't think Janie 1970. It's like No Frills Theater.
No, that's it. No Frills.
Yeah. Which already,
you know. You're like, ooh, I'm going to get, where am I?
Where am I? Frills.
Yeah, No Frills. I'm tired of all these frills.
all of the films have a lot of frills.
Yeah.
No, but I'm glad that we watched it because... Although, I obviously, I don't think Janie is feminist in any way.
I would disagree.
Really? Are you about to throw out the Anna Biller
excuses? I just wanted
excuses?
To be a contradictor. contrarian.
Because he knew that he was going to have to side with Anna Biller. And we know
I like a lead woman massacring her lovers freely.
For sure, but it also just made no sense, you know? I think if maybe she had a different attitude towards the women,
yeah,
then maybe...
She was kind of just Charles Manson crazy.
But, like, I feel like even Charles Manson has, like, a thesis statement. I feel like if I were to say... Is Charles Manson dead?
No, but... Are you sure he's not dead? I'm guessing no.
Actually, I think he did die.
Yeah, you're probably right. Now I'm pulling back some memories.
Yeah.
Of him dying. But at the end, they put her in the spoilers. They put her in a straitjacket and like throw away, which I think is a stupid
ending.
That was
like some weird like conclusion in the sense that none of the film made sense. So why try and make sense at the end?
Yeah. For a movie to be like a celebration of murderous sex.
He's dead, by the way.
Okay. Thank God. For a movie about the celebration of murderous sex, it's weird to like lock up your main character at the end and be like, "Ooh, that was bad, huh?" Like,
yeah, sure no, I actually think that you make a very strong point because I kind of just expected her to just keep going,
yeah,
and I was just going to be like, "Okay, why not?"
Yeah,
like that's what the movie was. But the
like,
fact
just
that
ride off on a motorcycle,
if anything, actually the ending kind of also reinforced the point that it's not feminist at all. Yeah. It's just saying like, yeah, no, fuck
lock
it.
That crazy bitch up.
Literally,
that's what it looks
like. But you know, it's I think it's anything so interesting as a cultural artifact. And Roberta hasn't done any interviews about it. I doubt that she will because she's more well known for a bunch of other films
that are also sex, like
yeah, they're also sexploitation. Yeah. When you look up Roberta on Wikipedia,
yeah,
it's just like most known for her sexploitation films, you know, which good for her.
Yeah.
You know, but thank you to Jack Braffman for a really, I mean, this is
for
only
what?
2 years old. The
wait,
interview that
old?
He gave.
Oh, yeah. For spilling the beans?
Yeah, for spilling the beans because...
He's like, listen, this masterpiece, I've carried a dark secret all these years. I was not the one that directed Janie.
Oh, my God. You know what's funny, though? The sound guy... refuted Jack and said that, oh no, Michael directed it, not Roberta. And I don't know why. Like, why would Jack lie? Like,
yeah, I mean,
John
are they
Amaro?
Just getting old? Are they getting old?
Right.
Is that it? Yeah.
John Amaro, are you lying?
Wow.
We don't know.
Break it down. Did you murder your husband?
Either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Janie, you can watch it on YouTube.
I was going to say do it, but also.
I wouldn't.
Maybe do it.
But. Maybe like watch it on double speed.
That'll be like a 5 minute watch.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I say watch. Go ahead, watch it. Make treat yourself. You know, when the kids aren't home, just fire.
Don't
that
watch
thing
it
up
during
there.
Quarantine. I did not watch it.
Oh,
during
it'd be
quarantine.
A fun quarantine.
No, it wouldn't.
It's like the madness. Just become
just
overcome
watch porn.
With the madness.
I think Pornhub has given out free porn, but Pornhub also supports child sex trafficking.
Oof,
so don't.
Yeah. Yeah, just go. All right, just play it safe.
You know,
watch
just practice safe, irresponsible sex.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Okay. Next one.
What's the next? What's next?
Next is Blood Diner, directed by Jackie Chong, and from 1987.
Ah, hello, fellow food lovers. I'm Phil Mignon, world famous gourmet. In my travels, I've sampled some of the most exquisite foods the world has to offer. And that's why they've asked me to tell you all about a charming new eatery located right downtown. As you can see, the atmosphere is lovely. But, of course, the finest attribute of this quaint cafe is the marvelous cuisine. By the way, what is the special ingredient in the Tuesday surprise?
Well, if I told you that, it wouldn't be a surprise anymore, would it?
They're mouth-watering specialties. We'll have you, as they say, licking your lips. Only the freshest natural ingredients are selected.
The first ingredients we need are two stomachs from a couple of tramps.
For use in their carefully guarded recipes.
A give my right arm for that secret recipe.
Yes, the chef puts a bit of himself into every succulent dish. Oh, and he's always pleased to serve you to your friends. Shouldn't that be serve you and your friends? No. Your gracious hostess will direct you to your table, where you will dine as if there's no tomorrow. So, breeze on down and don't let anything stand in your way. This Epicurean haven is called Blood Diner.
You got that right, homo.
So, this is Phil Mignon, saying bon appetit. Oh, mommy.
The Blood Diner. First they greet you, then they eat you. No one under 17 admitted.
Okay, and that was a bit of Blood Diner from 1987 and directed by Jackie Kong.
Jackie Kong?
Jackie Kong.
Okay. Is it Chong or Kong?
Kong.
Kong. Okay.
Sorry, did I say Chong before?
I think so. I misheard.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Now I have my notes in front of me. Jackie Kong.
Okay. Yeah, what can you tell me about her? Okay, so this movie is a schlocky 80s night. Was this 80s, 90s?
87.
87, okay. And man, this movie, one of the first things I thought was this is like the best trauma movie that trauma never made.
It really is.
Yeah.
The opening, the first 5 minutes alone. By the way, I think this movie is dubbed in parts.
Weird.
And not dubbed in other parts.
Yes.
And I don't understand why.
They must have had some audio difficulties because, yeah, it is stupid dubbed.
Some other parts aren't, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, as soon as I would think, like, okay, yeah, this is dubbed, then someone would say something that sounded real. And
right.
I'm like, but is it dubbed?
Yeah. And but then, what about, like, did my ear just adjust to this horrible dubbing? Or is this now
and
real?
And then, like, the uncle has, like, a weird accent. Did you pick up on that?
Oh, yeah. You mean the brain in the jar?
Yeah, the brain in the jar, but also before, I'm specifically thinking about the opening scene.
Okay.
That opening scene threw me for a loop with the cops. Well, we never saw the cops.
Okay.
I don't remember
the opening scene.
Oh my God, there were kids.
Yeah.
It was the brothers as kids. I think it's Christmas.
Oh, yes.
And they're about to open presents, and then their uncle comes in, like an extra out of The Sopranos, blood all over him, like, kids, you know. I think he says that he has something to tell them,
yeah.
But he doesn't tell them. He's like, just know that, like, I'll always be here for you or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you, like, hear the noise
like a
of
medallion.
Cops. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
here's like a medallion,
yeah.
Right? And then he like walks outside after this, like, really, and these are literal kids. These are like 6-year-olds,
yeah.
Which I want to know if those 6-year-olds are okay today. And then, like, off screen, you hear like a gun massacre.
Yeah, he like walks to the police and, like, I think he's got a knife or something.
Yeah, something like
some
that.
Some weapon. And they just blow into bits. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had in my, yeah, that was pretty cool, huh? for an intro to be like, to introduce you where there's already a murderer who's like psycho and
there's
he gets blown
kids.
Away at the beginning.
Yeah. And then that's like not even the movie at like a 10%.
Yeah.
It just keeps escalating. And
man.
Tiger King was definitely influenced by this film.
Yeah. Wow. So the story is these kids, then they're so traumatized and they have this weird medallion.
Yeah.
That they.
And they miss their uncle.
They miss
their
uncle.
They don't have like any bad. Yeah. They think that he was murdered.
They're vegetarians, which is very important. It seems like there's a lot of vegetarianism in horror movies, bad horror movies. This movie reminded me of some really classic bad horror movies.
Yeah,
like Trolls 2 and The Room.
There's a
which isn't horror,
there's
but
like a talking
so
brain,
silly.
Bro.
The talking brain. Yeah,
and then ending scene.
So wait, so this vegetarians who you, so they're vegetarian in the late 80s, so you know they're weird.
This was when vegetarian was not quirky.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so but then they also make all their food with human parts.
Yeah.
So
and so they kill people for that.
So they kill people for that. And they're doing some sort of like blood sacrifice ritual
to reincarnate their uncle.
Who is a brain jar.
Yes, it's literally brain in a jar with some eyes, and he keeps talking about titties.
Yes.
He talks about titties.
He's got some good quotes. they're trying to resurrect this man.
And because they miss him.
If there were ever a movie that deserved and probably needed one of those long titles, it's like Psycho Vegetarian Butchers of the Blood Diner? I think it needed a bigger title, because as Blood Diner
is pretty good.
That to me,
I like diners.
It's a little too boxed in.
I mean, it's where they like ate the.
Yeah, but this movie was more than just about the diner.
It was like
brains.
We had a god.
That's right. It was Naked Woman. National International Women's Month.
Yeah. Oh, fun fact. Uh-huh. So as opposed to Janie, which had a mostly male crew.
Yeah.
Blood Diner was made with a female writer and a female producer and obviously a female director. So
female writer, producer, and director. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So
this should be a classic.
It should be. I think the fact that it's not good is why it is not. No, but Blood Diner is probably my favorite of the four that we watched. I think that, if anything, like it gives me a lot of respect for Jackie. Jackie was known for doing kind of like really schlocky 80s films. She also did The Being, Night Patrol, and The Underachievers. All of those were also just like 80s cult classics. So she's definitely like a cult. Like when you go to her website, she, even her like header, it says cult filmmaker. So she knows her lane.
Oh, wow. That's good. I like a person who
just
knows that.
In January, actually, at Chapman University, she did a screening of Blood Diner and a Q&A. So, you know, I actually don't know much about Roberta, but I'm sure that Roberta isn't ashamed of her stuff. But Jackie obviously takes a lot of pride in this, and she does still do a lot of talks about it. And some fun facts that I think you'll really enjoy. She said that everyone was high on steroids while making the film.
On steroids?
Yes. She said that it was a no cocaine set, but she actually made the audience guess. She was like, they were high on something else, could you guess? And they were like, well, we think that one guy was on steroids. And she was like, everyone was on steroids.
Really?
Yes.
What?
And she says, quote unquote, that everything was for real, in the sense that the film was done with no actors. She just went out on the streets of Hollywood in the 80s and cast off the streets.
What a goddess.
She took the film to be rated to the MPAA.
Yeah.
And they wanted to give it a XXX rating. Uh-huh. And she refused to re-edit it. So she just spoke to the production company and they released it unrated.
Uh-huh.
And she also said that the ratings board said that the film had no socially redeeming value.
I'm sure they did.
She also said that, and I don't remember this part, maybe you do.
Uh-huh.
She said the zombie attacks at the end were not scripted.
What is that supposed to mean?
I think that means that the actors just actually went at each other. I don't really know what that means either.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and watch it. I remember thinking, wow, this ending is great. And if you were just kind of, if this movie was in the background, like a fun party, I think the whole party would be watching the last 10-15 minutes, because it gets like, woo, like the train is going off the tracks.
The hilarious thing about me, there are a couple things that really stood out to me during this movie. First off, the lady victims, what was their direction? Because at one point she's about to escape, but then she's like, oh, wait, no, I forgot my purse.
And so she goes back
into the murder den to get her purse.
Yeah.
And then that's when she's killed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you fucking with me? No woman, after almost being escaped from murder would right. go back to get their
this
purse.
Movie was super silly. And if that was usually that would be written and directed by a man, and so it would be like huge for me. That would be like soul cringingly stupid. But I like that it's written and directed by women, because then I can have more. It seems like I can genuinely laugh with
think,
that rather than.
I do think, especially when we talk about the female gaze, uh-huh. Especially when it comes to schlocky films, a lot of people kind of almost take too much weight to the female gaze.
Yeah.
In a sense, yeah. Because I definitely think that male conscripted gaze is present here, but mm-hmm. I do think that there is less objectification in a way than
it might like. I've never heard that male conscripted gaze. That sounds pretty on the mark. For...
Well, so what I mean by that is that she still was making a film for a certain type of audience. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, I mean, there's definitely tits in it. There's right. definitely a lot of vulgar stuff being said in it. But I do think, I don't know, it's interesting. This one didn't feel as, like, leechy as Janie did.
Mm-hmm.
I do think as we go through these movies, whether they're more highbrow like Good Manners or if they're more schlocky like Blood Diner, mm-hmm. You are seeing kind of an ownership in how female bodies are portrayed. Like when we move into Mirror Mirror, we barely see any nudity in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Good Manners is kind of a league in and of its own. But anyway, what I meant to say with that is it definitely felt like she kept winking with us every scene. Like nothing yeah. felt
okay. I could
overly,
see that.
Maybe. I
Such
don't know.
As when there's a scene where they're like about to make love, and this, which itself is a description, making love that I would not use in this movie. But when the woman is naked and then she gets her head pushed into the fryer, like French
oh
fryer.
God.
So then she has a big ball, like a big chicken
and it's
nugget
just like
head.
A ball.
But her body is still naked.
Yeah,
so,
it makes no sense.
Yeah, she's like, ah.
I'm like, why is her head a ball, though? That's not what it would look like.
I know. And so I could see the kind of winking with the audience thing. You know?
Yeah, nothing felt serious. I will say, I think the most hilarious part is actually the end for a lot of reasons. But I don't know if you noticed, there was like a normal concert going on.
Uh-huh.
And then in the next room was where the satanic ritual was happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like people at the concert were completely ignoring the satanic
right.
ritual. And I was like, I'm sorry, but am I crazy?
Yeah.
Like, are we
see that happening, like a two-stage
blood happening here?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I imagine it was in the same room.
You know what I also just remembered? That we have a black lady police officer, right?
Yes, and...
And she's a badass. She like...
She's right. I mean, nobody can act in this movie, but she actually might be able to act in this
she
movie.
Has like a lot of amazing lines. Like,
and she turns out to be British at some point.
Yes, I think yeah. so. And I think at one point someone's hitting on her.
Oh my God.
Do you remember the scene?
That is like The Room quality bad.
Please
acting.
Tell me. Because I'm blanking a little bit on
yeah.
that scene.
So the other detective, his whole...
Yeah.
His whole persona is creepy detective who
yeah,
wants to
yeah,
date
yeah,
with
yeah,
the,
yeah.
Black
the black
female
girl.
Detective
yeah.
who's the only, you know, smart person in the movie.
Yeah, which
and
thank God.
He flirts with her
yes.
in a just like phenomenally absurd, creepy way where he licks his mouth.
Oh
and,
my God, yeah.
Like tries to do this winking thing.
Yeah.
And it, like, Tim and Eric could not do a better.
Oh, yeah. No, Tim and Eric couldn't do this. Like
they couldn't do that.
Like Jackie Kong could do Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie, but Tim and Eric couldn't do.
Yeah, I mean, I yeah, that's a good. Yeah, like I agree with that. I sign up for that. Yeah, I want to give a couple quotes for the listeners just to really wet your whistle and really make you want to run out and see this movie. One of the first lines that I had to run and write down and play back a few times was the brain. These are all from The Brain inside the jar.
Yeah, The Brain.
With the big googly eyes.
Dub Brain.
He says, I lost my genitals and my life God. Because of lack of discipline with the Glee Club girls.
Oh, no.
And his lines are all like read really fast. Was like, and then.
And in an accent.
And then in a weird accent. And another one is, I let my schlong do the thinking for me, and I got confused. There's like this weird like break in the word confused. And then the last one I wrote was, I made a mistake because I was horny, and now she's dead. It's just like all these lines. You get to experience those.
I just
go out and get this. This is a hard movie to see.
This is actually another very hard movie to see. I think you can only buy it on DVD.
You can watch it on some streaming thing I've never heard of before.
Okay.
It's like it was on some other Stars or something, and now it's on some streaming distribution that I don't even know.
So this is like really, sometimes I feel like there are levels of cult, you know what I mean? Like, technically, you can argue Quentin Tarantino is a cult filmmaker. I don't know who would, but you could. But this is like deep, deep cult. The way that I found out about Blood Diner was actually off of Letterboxd. I was just looking at a bunch of different lists of lady directed horrors. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the cover art for this one.
Oh, man.
And I really like the name, Blood Diner. I was like, oh, that's fun. Yeah. And like I said, this actually might be the one that I had the most fun watching. I'm not sure if it's it might be my favorite, just because it was just so weird.
Yeah.
Like nothing made sense. And you knowing that they were all...
You could put this on with a group of people and you could get some laughs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you definitely like want a post-quarantine party, put on Blood Diner.
Yeah.
You know, and make... It was sandwiches they made. Oh, my God. No. And then all of the scenes in the diner were insane. Especially, do you remember that big guy? It kind of looked like Zach Galifianakis.
The big guy?
That like kept eating the food and then like threw it up.
Oh, yeah, the vomit.
Oh, the vomit. Oh, oh my God. This movie.
Yeah.
This movie just has everything. I think the only thing it didn't have were lesbians.
You're right. You're right.
I think the other three movies have lesbians. Have that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jackie. Man. Give us lesbians.
This was so many people, I think, oh, like a good bad. It's so hard to find a good bad movie. Usually bad movies are also boring.
Yeah.
Or slow. This one's good, I think.
This one's good, bad movie. Yeah. And honestly, so much respect to Jackie. She is an Asian American cult director. We barely see any lady directors, but seeing this Asian American woman just like kill it with a really, you know, strong vision, whether you like it or not, it is a strong vision for sure.
She deserves to make Blood Diner 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, she actually says that one of the most common things that she gets is people think that she's a dude, because also like Jackie
could be a dude's name.
And she says that oh my God, she gets like people being like, man, I can't wait to meet him,
he's given us.
So like, and I actually kind of agree with that I do feel like it's not explicitly clear that there's a female gaze here. Like, no. I said there's definitely kind of like a male conscripted gaze, but I also feel like it's perfectly fair for women to also kind of be, I mean, look at Roberta Finlay. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when we kind of even think about modern comedy nowadays, we also have had like these waves of like female comedians that do male comedy, quote unquote, to appeal to large masses. So, I mean, this is kind of in a way that, you know, I see how it's done, and no shame in the game. If anything, it's like
my favorite game.
It's another very interesting cultural artifact, but I would definitely recommend this one to watch.
Yes.
I think it's necessary.
Do it.
All right. Are we ready?
Make it part of your life. Make it your whole aesthetic.
Are we ready for Mirror Mirror?
Mirror Mirror. Okay. I am.
Let's go.
Behind this glass lies a century of terror. An evil force awaiting their deadly command.
The mirror is using.
Ghosts do not exist. I felt something. Like I or someone. Something was controlling it. Making it happen.
I told you, she is back.
You can't just leave like that.
I gotta think this through.
Can he just leave like that?
What the hell is going on?
The rumors are true. There is something haunting the Weatherworth house. Only it's not a ghost. It gave me powers. And those powers can be for you too, Nikki. I'm bleeding. Are you trying to say that you had something to do with this? Well, let's just say that you and me are innocent. What was all that racket? I can control it now. Stop it. Or I can start it.
Mirror, mirror. Starring William Sanderson, Karen Black, and introducing Rainbow Harvest.
All right, and that was a bit of 1990s Mirror, Mirror, not to be confused with the Julia Roberts and Lily Collins movie. Mm-mm. It is directed by Marina Sargenti, and yeah.
Was this made in 1990 on the dot?
It was released in 1990.
Okay, good
enough
for me. I'm
assuming that it was probably made in 89, uh-huh, going into the 90. Do you know when Beetlejuice was made?
No.
Okay.
I don't. One of us will look that up, though. The other one will stall.
Okay, in the meantime.
This movie features a very Winona writer.
That's why I mentioned it.
Person.
Beetlejuice was 1988.
Okay.
So basically it stars a Lydia Dietz knockoff.
Yes.
Because that's just what
a woman it was. By the name of, I've got it right here,
Rainbow Harvest.
That's
is the
right.
Actress's name. And she really wasn't in anything ever since.
Ever since. This was like her last one. So she had done some
her
things
first...
before this.
Oh, yeah?
She must have been pretty young, though. Before this was Miami Vice role in some yeah. movie called Old Enough. In any case, yeah, she didn't
really
do much after
this. I wanted to know if
that
was her
real
name.
Yeah, I think it was.
It really?
Yeah. Yeah, many are surprised to know that her real name is indeed Rainbow Harvest.
Wow. That's a Brandon Flowers thing.
Brandon Flowers?
The Killers.
Got it. So, yeah. So, what's the... Do you want to do the...
So,
the...
how can we describe... It? Mirror, Mirror reminded me of an extended Are You Afraid of the Dark episode.
Sure. I was thinking Goosebumps. That was what I grew up with.
I thought of Are You Afraid of the... Because Are You Afraid of the Dark is a little bit better. But
okay.
Also, it's funny. I started watching Are You Afraid of the Dark during this quarantine. And there was a Mirror episode that is almost identical
really?
To Mirror, Mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like this...
Haunted mirror-ish.
It, in a way, because we do get like a satanic
reveal. Yeah, that's true. It's like a demon thing.
Yeah, so this mirror like is kind of possessing a girl. It kills a lot of dogs. That's something that we did see.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's got a very Winona Ryder feeling.
Lydia Dietz.
Lydia Dietz. Lead goth, troubled youngster, punk-ish, goth-ish, put into a new school that is very pastel.
Her
blue,
mom is insane.
A funny like her mom is like a Hollywood.
No, her mom like beyond. It's like Troop Beverly Hills, dude.
Yes, yes.
And can you clarify this part for me? Was her mom supposed to be a psychologist?
No, her mom was going to the psychologist, which back then was like,
only
rich people do that. And like the psychologist is telling you to like do dumb shit.
And I think it's implied that the mother didn't care that the father died or something.
Well, her therapist told her to start dating again. And that was like, we think it's too early, mom. You're an idiot.
Yeah. But then they got like two dogs and Winona Ryder's like Rainbow Harvest, actually.
Yeah.
Rainbow Harvest is like, well, you know, you love those dogs more than you loved him.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like a friend.
Okay, now we're getting to the good stuff for me.
What do you mean going to the... We knew the friend.
I thought... Right, but... Okay, so I thought the friend was really well casted. Beautiful, fun. And the antagonist girl, woman...
Rainbow Harvest?
No. I would say she's a protagonist. She's like the one...
Rainbow Harvest is our protagonist? Even though she's the one that does the killing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's the main character.
Okay.
Right? I mean, yes.
Okay.
So
yeah.
In school, there's this popular girl with big boobs.
Oh my God. The dialogue was so crazy because she's running for class president.
Yeah.
And they imply that she got a boob job, which means that like a 15-year-old got her. Yeah. Remember when.
I thought she just had big boobs.
No, I think it's implied that she got a boob job. Okay. Because it's because the friend was like. Yeah, it's good to see what your daddy buys for you. That way you get
phew, right over my head.
I was like, oh shit, 15-year-olds getting boob jobs.
Okay, well, let's pretend for a moment that she's not 15. That actress is so gorgeous. Maybe it's like the quarantine fever that I've succumbed to, but I was entranced watching this movie every time she came on screen. And I thought, who is this star? And so I looked up, I did a little bit of research. Her name is Charlie Spradling. And she actually for a while was the, what's the right word? Like model for Full Moon Pictures. You know Full Moon Pictures?
I actually don't.
So Full Moon Pictures was very much like Troma.
Really?
Yes. I want to say, so I watched a lot of Full Moon Pictures movies growing up in the VHS store horror campy, vein. So I want to say that maybe Puppet Masters. Just a bunch of dumb-ish.
Okay.
So she was like a spokesmodel for them. Mm. And she was in a few things. I think she had a chance at some stardom. Maybe she dated some famous people too, but I think that were she alive today, she'd be a mega star. At least
she's dead.
Let me rephrase that. Were she to be that young and acting at this time, I think she would have
No, not at all.
Oh my God. Maybe it's the fever. Maybe it's the quarantine.
Maybe it's, no, I mean, she did very well, but it's just there are so many girls nowadays, like Zoe Dutch and Haley Lou Richardson and Caitlin.
Are these girls
Deffer.
You went to school with?
No, these are. That's what I'm saying. There's such an archetype for like young white studious girls.
Something about the way she played this. It was a fun bully.
I
wanted her to bully. Me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of typical. Well. To get into kind of some of the interesting things about Mirror Mirror is that it for was you. Co-written by sisters. So
co-written, so two sisters.
Two sisters, Gascon sisters.
Okay.
The crew was 70% female, nice. Which today would be an anomaly.
Yeah.
Back then it was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was a direct-to-video release. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe Blood Diner might have been a direct-to-video release too, but oftentimes we know kind of like exactly what that means. And definitely interesting in that sense. One of the actually most interesting things about Mirror Mirror is that there are four sequels.
I was thinking I was going to bring that information to the table. I thought she probably doesn't know about how many sequels there are.
Yeah, there are four. How are there four sequels?
You know, I thought that there would be a sequel or two. I didn't think there'd be that many.
Yeah. When I
that
was
are
like
consistently bad too. Yeah. Every single one after this is
they
like,
actually
man.
Say that it gets worse. And this movie's not that good.
It's not. But I also would stick up for it a bit.
I would stick up for it in the sense that this is the first one of the four that we've seen in order.
Yeah.
Where it definitely felt like a lady team behind it. And that's not to like take away anything from it at all, but just the way that the friendships were explored, the way that the kind of like womanhood was explored, I wouldn't go so far to say it's overtly feminist, because I don't think there's anything in its messaging that screams this is a feminist movie. But I definitely do think that the female gaze is present here instead of the male gaze. And I think that's interesting. Yeah. I if anything, I kind of saw this movie just to be more interesting as a fact of its time, because it's also 1990, and we all know, even now in 2020, like, we don't know what the 20s are going to look like, because we don't have it's the first year of the decade. And 1990 was, again, the first year of the decade, so you see a lot of, like, post 80s influence, but you also see the introduction of some 90s things going on. That's as true. Well, that, to me, that was probably the most interesting part of the movie.
Okay. There were lesbians in this movie.
I think that I don't remember the lesbians outright, but it definitely felt very queer to me.
Oh, right. Maybe that's what I'm really just going
just
after.
Just like the relationship between Rainbow Harvest didn't and the
whole
her friend.
Thing, wasn't the whole backstory slash that, yeah, that it was like a couple at the beginning, right? In the old timey.
Dude, no, it was them, sisters? Wasn't it? No, it was
right,
them.
Right. I mean, you learn that at the end, but at the beginning, it seems like it's like an old-timey thing, and there's lovers and sisters.
For sure.
Oh, maybe she sacrificed.
There's definitely like subtext, I would argue. Okay, subtext. Yeah. Whereas like Blood Diner, there was no subtext.
Yeah.
Janie, it was explicit.
Yeah.
And Good Manners, it's very explicit. Mm-hmm. But here, there's definitely like some almost like closeted subtext going on here.
Okay.
The kind of sad or interesting part about this whole entire thing, for as unique as it is, and it's actually a little bit easier to find. You can watch it for free up on Tubi, right?
Okay. I think so.
On Tubi or Vudu. It's on one of those. Anyway, Marina has essentially disappeared.
Marina being
the director.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
After this one?
After she did like a Xena Warrior Princess episode.
I saw that too.
Which,
yeah.
LOL.
Yeah.
But 97 is her last credit. I wasn't able to find anything at all.
For a movie that spawned all those sequels?
A movie that spawned four sequels. Yeah. A movie that had a 70% female crew.
Uh-huh.
And a movie that, on, you know, like I said, I wouldn't say it's bad. I mean, I wouldn't say it's good either. But I definitely think that it deserves maybe a little bit more in retrospect. It's kind of very weird that, I mean, knock on wood, but she could be dead. She could, you know, like, I couldn't find anything at all on her.
Hmm. Is this, and before this, did she make any movies?
No,
do we know?
This was her first film. I remember that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there's a story there. I have two main qualms with this movie. One is that this mirror that's supposedly like haunted, causing this woman to kill everybody or something, is not haunted looking enough. It looks like a big old mirror, but it's not even that old.
They clearly also just shot this on such a budget, because you never see anything come out of the mirror. Did you notice that?
You do. There's demon head comes out.
But if you notice, go back and watch it, because you're right, that's kind of the only one. Uh-huh. But it's framed in a way that you never see the mirror head on. It's framed that you see the demon head creep out
that
from
scene,
the frame.
Yes, but then there is this like there's this like mirror and this weird special effect where it's like implying,
oh, the blood?
Implying that there's like a hole, a gash to another demonic dimension kind of thing. That's what I remember anyways.
No, yeah, but they clearly like filmed it and wrote it in a way that you never really had to deal with the mirror.
Although you do, I don't know if I would. They do a fun thing where they give you the mirror's perspective, and it's like blue, and it's like, this is what the mirror is seeing.
That's kind of neat. Oh my God, that was just like so. It was super Are You Afraid of the Dark. Like, the effects were Are You Afraid of the Dark.
Yeah.
It's, even though it's slightly explicit, I don't think I think maybe in the shower we see boobs, but
boobs.
But it's very natural. It didn't feel like,
it feels like a horror movie kill boobs kind of situation. Because Charlie Spradling,
Oh, it's Charlie.
It's Charlie. And I'm thinking, I actually got really like nervous when they start to show her naked, because I thought they wouldn't do that, you know? She could be, she's just a star. She's a star of this movie. And yeah, it's kind of just the horror movie hot water gas in the hot water in the shower death.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Or hot, you know, steam, whatever.
I don't remember it being filmed in, because usually in those scenes, mm-hmm. like we get like 30 close ups of the boobs.
That's true. It wasn't that.
It wasn't that. Anyway, yeah. No, this movie was again, like, not to keep repeating myself, it's just kind of like a cultural artifact. And it's just kind of really if anything, I'm left with more questions. Like, where did Marina go?
Where'd you go?
Yeah. I would love to know. Well, her Marina experience. And
Rainbow Harvest didn't really do anything after this either.
Yeah. Maybe the Gascon sisters, I wasn't able to find anything on them either.
The ones that wrote this? Yeah. Huh. So, listeners, if you know, hit us up.
For sure.
Put us in touch. Because I kind of like the movie. It was okay. It was good. That's my review. It's good.
It's good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, for how easily you can find it, you can watch it for free up on fucking Vudu, dude. So, Vudu's.
Dude it.
Yeah. Dude, so do it. Dude. Do it. Because if anything, I just want Marina. Uh-huh. Come find us.
And Charlie Spratling. You could also come find us.
Charlie Spratling, I remember your boobs.
This movie has some familiar faces. Did you recognize anyone from this
movie?
Dude,
I recognized no one from this
really?
Fucking movie.
I recognized two people.
Shut up. Wait. I recognized one person.
Okay.
It is the professor or the teacher. Yes. And he's from One Day at a Time.
He plays the nerdy teacher in every show and movie and thing. Steven Tobolowsky.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, this movie had the Pet Cemetery person was William Sanderson, who has been in Blade Runner, True Blood, American Gods. He's still working.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this movie
all
had
of the
some
dudes, because actually, I also read that the only person to reprise their role was also a dude
from the series in the series of sequels.
Yeah. And I'm just like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's not Marina, I would just want to know how it was on set, because somehow I was able to find the fun fact that 70% of the crew was female, including the main creatives. But we have like no lasting document of.
Right.
You know, we don't know where Rainbow Harvest is or anything. And so it's just kind of weird. Hmm. So, you know, maybe the more people watch it,
the more information we'll get.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
All right. So now we come to the modern age.
Oh, wah, wah.
Okay. And this is 2017's Good Manners.
Dormindo no chão, dorme no feno, dorme cavalinho, aproveita que é pequeno.
Vinte e oito semanas, tá tudo em ordem.
Ele é normal?
É.
Dormiu bem? Tive um sonho esquisito. Você anda pela casa de noite. Ana?
Grande, mão grande. É um menino forte, Ana.
All right, and that was 2017's Good Manners, directed by Mark. Marco Dutra and Juliana Rojas.
A double director.
It is a double directing team. So one is a man and the other one is a woman. But, you know, still very important. And also I chose this one because it's also foreign.
This is Brazil.
It's from Brazil.
And the other ones were all U.S., right?
Yeah. Okay. Other ones were all U.S. Juliana is also gay as well. And so I wanted to give out some LGBT representation. And also Good Manners stars a black woman.
Yes.
And I really wanted, if anything, I really wanted like a black female director to look at. But there just haven't really, we have one coming up with Candyman. Candyman uh-huh. is directed by Nia DaCosta, who, a black lady, who did Little Woods with Tessa Thompson and Lily James. So this is kind of, in a way, our tip off to, you know, diverse female directors, because for the most part, the people that have been getting horror movies to direct have been white women. But we have some representation. We got Jackie and now we have Juliana.
Sounds good. So Good Manners is yeah. the story of a pregnant lady. And we don't know how, we don't see her husband. And so as a viewer, a lot of the focus is on the black female lead woman
who is Clara.
Who's Clara. And she is auditioning.
Pregnant lady is Anna.
Okay. So Clara and Anna. And Clara is auditioning to become the.
Like a maid.
Like a nanny person. Yeah. Or maid and then nanny.
Yeah. Something like that.
Because the woman's, Clara is like. Wait, which one? Anna?
Anna is the pregnant one.
Anna is like, oh, I'll also need you to help me take care of this kid or whatever.
Yeah.
And this movie threw me because the cover art makes it look like it's about a baby werewolf or something. But the movie doesn't show the husband. And then at maybe 20 minutes into the film.
I think it's more like 30.
Okay, well. I'm not sure if you know where I'm going to go with this, but at some point the pregnant woman picks up a
yeah.
photograph of her and her horse. Yeah. And she's like, I love this horse. And I thought, oh my God, she has a horse baby inside of her.
Oh my God.
And this movie rules now. And this is like the ultimate horse girl film.
Yeah.
And so then from that high, I definitely took a hit when did turn out to be a werewolf baby inside of her. And from there, the movie goes. She has a werewolf baby, etc.
It's kind of like almost two movies in one.
I would agree.
Yeah. And it almost comes at exactly like at the 1 hour mark is where Anna is killed by her own werechild, if you will.
Thank you for saying that with such sincerity.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
And then the last hour.
She was unfortunately killed by her werechild.
I mean,
rest in peace.
That scene was gross. Like you see the stomach explode.
Yeah.
This movie is slightly gross in certain points, but I think probably one of the most laughable things about it is the creature design.
Oh, I liked it.
That the baby werewolf?
It looked like a reborn baby.
It looked so fake. I almost wish that we had never seen it. If anything,
oh, really?
I really like it when the little boy is half human, half, like when he has a hairy
yeah.
chest.
Yeah.
Like that looks cool. But yeah. as soon as he's full werewolf, I'm like, that looks like the Harrison Ford movie. Was it Call of the Wild?
Uh-huh.
It looked
where
like
he's
that.
A dog
CGI
or something?
Dog.
Like a dog.
Yeah.
CGI dog. You know what? So here is something that I must admit.
What?
I got to a point with this movie, and it was when the lead character is taking care of now the werewolf baby has become a werewolf child.
So Clara is taking care of. I think his name is. Josh.
Okay, Josh, the werewolf.
I don't think that's the name, I'm sorry.
And the werewolf Josh says, you're not my mom. Nah. And I just thought, as a stepdad, myself, I don't want to hear any MFing kid doing the you're not my dad. To me, that hurts my soul because it's too real. It's too real.
Yeah.
And I also just didn't want to see that movie. You know, I didn't want to see that movie.
I
like the lesbian.
That's what I was gonna say. I wish that the film had, even though I kind of, so reading more about Marco and Juliana's intention with it, okay, made me like Good Manners a little bit more. But I do think it's almost a crime that the film isn't about Anna and Clara,
right?
Because I think that's the more interesting story.
Yeah.
Even so, one thing about Good Manners that's different from the other films that we've seen that we can argue is that it's definitely symbolic for and a signifier of a lot of issues going on in Sao Paulo. So, you know, even the directors, they said that it's not a coincidence that, you know, they cast this white Brazilian mm-hmm. who comes from a lot of privilege looking for a black maid, mm-hmm. you know, and then they fall in love. And then how does that look? I definitely see the intention of all of the different class structures mm-hmm. and contrasts in mm-hmm. the film, you know, even down to like animalistic urges versus, you know, human emotions. You know, there's definitely that push and pull that keeps the whole film going. But it definitely, you know, I think that it would have been much more successful if this was actually a love story.
Yeah.
And I guess you could still argue it is one. But walking in, I thought it was just going to be about the lesbians because uh-huh. I knew that I had first heard of this film thanks to one of my favorite Instagram friends that we have, Leslie Borden. She had written about it. So I thought it was just going to be a lesbian film. And it just kind of isn't.
No. Well, it is and it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the beginning.
It's very interesting.
The whole reason why she raises the child, right,
is out of love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, no.
So I stopped watching it after the cranky werewolf child. I didn't.
So you don't know how it ends?
I don't know how it ends. I don't even know how it goes after that. Like, that probably was.
She ends up shooting him. The halfway point.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah, but
I wish you would have.
She ends up shooting him, but scene. Like he survives, and then how it ends is everyone is about to kill them, but
both of them,
okay. But they're about to face the angry mob together, and then that's how it dies. Like that's sort of literally the final
hand in hand.
Yeah, righteously hand in hand.
So, what did you? How did that play out for you? Did you like that?
You know, I always suggest Good Manners for people to watch because I do think it's a unique film. I just don't know if it's as successful as it wants to be. Another really interesting thing that I found out is that they were most inspired by Disney films, specifically Beauty and the Beast. But they said that even through like the color palettes and everything, they studied Disney, like 2D classic Disney films more than they did horror films. They said they didn't really study any horror films for this movie. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense.
I mean, there's the birth of the werewolf. Does he go off to kill other people, I guess?
He does kill one of his friends.
Okay.
And then he tries to attack a little girl, but she shoots him.
Is he a boy? Not. Is he like a child still? Or is he like a teenager? Or is he like an adult?
This is all like it all happens within the same. There's not a time jump.
So he doesn't go to be like an adult grown up.
No, werewolf, this is a little 20 baby werewolf.
So he's still a kid werewolf.
Yeah, when she shoots him and everything, and when they it all takes place in the same night.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, yeah, I think that this is a really interesting film to study. One, to also get the Brazilian voice. Two, to also kind of see all of these different, you know, like class structures and race structures, and also this LGBT angle. And yeah, I'm not too sure if it's highly successful as like a creature feature, but I think that there's a lot to unpack here. And if anything, it does feel very female. There's the female gaze. Introduced there. Even the sex scene was, it was very beautiful-ish.
Yeah.
In a way.
I believed there, even though I didn't love all the acting necessarily, I did start to believe them as a couple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I wasn't sure if I was going to do at the beginning.
I liked Claire a lot. I think Claire is like amazing in this film.
Yeah.
Anna was a little weird, but yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that there's like a film that I really love somewhere in Good Manners. Uh-huh. It's just overlong.
What do you think about? I had really specific feeling about the way they do the werewolf. They tell you the werewolf origin story at one point, like maybe an hour into it. They're like, oh, so here's the story of why she has a werewolf baby. And I found it to be so simple and boring that it wasn't even worth telling.
Yeah.
I would have just rather they had left it up to our imagination or just thrown a line in somewhere, because they break it into like an animated throwback, an animated telling of the story, and it just didn't need to happen. Wasn't that interesting. She just slept with a werewolf guy. That's it.
Yeah, I think this film would have been a lot more successful if it was about 30 to 45 minutes shorter and if it focused more on showing and not telling. I felt like a lot of it was spoon-fed. And I feel like the film wasn't sure what to focus on. Marco and Juliana said that they really wanted to drive home this theme of women resisting against the world, like women resisting to protect something. Mm-hmm. But especially when you decide to kill off one of them, I don't know. I think it was just very
maybe
weird they decided to kill
her if she survived, and that you could still have the same exact
ending
and everything, but just if she survived, it may be that
though I mean,
the love story dies as soon as she dies,
then it's like another
it's a story about raising a kid, which I find to be really obnoxious. It's not. I mean, not the act of raising children, but that story coming off a love story is like, ugh. Now I gotta watch this brat
be
mean to her. And
Were there
too many cooks in the kitchen for this one? Is that possible? Can we say
maybe
that the
even
guy
though they
was
say
in charge
that
of the
they...
crappy parts?
They both say that they've always worked together, so it's
okay. Well,
so and they said that it's very like a simpatico process and things like that.
I don't
know
how you do that. More power to you if you can work with somebody like that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Right. No. They said that they do, like, they write together, they edit together, they direct together.
And they're not a romantic couple, or they?
No.
All?
This no. is I think it's a gay dude and a gay woman.
Wow.
Cool. I know Juliana for sure is gay, but I don't know about Marco. I'm not going to be problematic here.
Yeah.
But,
so, Brazilian? Are they both Brazilian?
Yeah, they're both Brazilian. They met in film school in Sao Paulo in 1999.
Cool.
I think Good Manners should definitely be talked about. And I recommended it to my kids, mm-hmm. even though it's not one of my favorites. But just because I do think it's ambitious. I think no matter what, it's ambitious. And I like seeing ambitious films. And I think I can actually say that for all of the films that we watched, even fucking Janie. They're ambitious.
That was ambitious. Yeah. That was not your average skin flick. That was something else.
Yeah, you had to enjoy a little bit of bloodlust for that one.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, and I just hope that it just keeps expanding what female directed horror films could be, because that was also kind of like my intention of doing this. We usually hear about like the same five female directed films, like Karen Kusama, who did Jennifer's Body, mm-hmm. and The Invitation. Black Christmas just got a remake, mm-hmm. with a female director. But at the same point, why did that have to be a thing? You know,
I would have loved to have seen it. I don't know anything about.
I didn't see it because there was no point in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I've talked about I've talked about Black Christmas on this podcast before, and why the original was so important.
Okay.
And it's just kind of like, you know, one thing that I'm noticing, especially with Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions, is that they'll look for these like titles that they think should be directed by women, like Black Christmas.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, what lady wants to direct it? And I can't think of anything like more boring than that. Like kind of the same thing with Carrie. That Carrie remake was done by a lady too. And it wasn't that good, you know? And I think what I like about all four of these movies is that they were original stories.
Okay.
Half of them were written by women. Janie, we could argue, was probably written by a woman as well. Not that there's like a lot of plot to it.
An insane woman.
And, you know, these four films are so different and show so many dualities to what being a woman and a woman as a genre filmmaker is. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what this exercise has taught us, even beyond borders.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you borders, take from?
Yeah. I think ambitious is a good tie-in. This is an ambitious women-led movie selection here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Mirror Mirror, I think, is ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, Mirror Mirror's plot is kind of like so weirdly convoluted that you can only kind of respect it. Like, I didn't expect Rainbow to be, because you're not sure if she was being possessed, because at first, just weird things were happening. She was actually getting stalked, right? Remember that she like woke up in the middle of the night and she said that she saw her dad.
Oh,
and
right,
her mom
right.
was like, yeah, you're crazy.
Earlier in the, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like Mirror Mirror is actually probably one of the more ambitious ones, I think, because it just almost doesn't make sense.
Franchise. And it did no launch one a franchise. Knew about,
exactly.
Probably made a bunch of VHS sales, you know, on somebody got some money out of it.
Yeah.
And then yeah.
Yeah, and so and that's why I also chose these films. I didn't want to just choose the typical ones that we hear about all the time. Everyone thinks that now lady directors have been thrown a bone over the last few years. And it definitely is becoming more mainstream, but there were a lot of women that tried to make films. And this is just four films that I chose. There were a lot of other films that we could have chosen for this. And I encourage you all to go and look at that history. You know, we once did The Monstrous Feminine with Barbara Creed, and that remains to be one of our most popular podcast episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who's Barbara Creed? Remind me.
Barbara Creed, Monstrous Feminine?
Oh, was the person that developed the whole idea.
Yeah, Monstrous Feminine. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, and that's because not a lot of people really talk about that in the mainstream. And I hope that we kind of get you all thinking about authorship and male conscripted gazes and female gazes and story perspectives and all of that, because it makes a difference.
And what better way to make a difference than to create something original, lift up voices around you, share the podcast that you listen to the most and love the most with all of your friends and family. And if that podcast is horsebeer.com, don't go to horsebeer.com. Do we own horsebeer.com?
Yes, you asshole.
Oh, we do. Go to horsebeer.com. Go to
horsebeer.com. That makes
me so mad. Go to horsebeer.com.
I just got that license renewed.
Did you?
Yes.
Yes. 1 year?
Yes.
All right. It's our anniversary.
It was our anniversary last podcast.
You know, a lot of people don't use the .com anymore, though. Everyone's on the Facebook and the...
I don't give a fuck. We invested.
Oh, I'm invested.
And professionalism.
I'm invested as well. Oh, good. I'm in there. Oh, I'm part of this. Yeah, but in any case, you know, spread the word. If you know somebody who might like it.
Oh, you're plugging us.
I'm trying to plug us.
Right. Yeah, no, that's kind. We've had a bit of an uptick due to the quarantine, and also my students this semester have been really proactive in getting on my ass about uploading and things like that. So if y'all are listening, hi, I miss y'all a lot.
Yes.
Our regular viewers or listeners,
yes,
we miss you too.
We miss you too.
I don't know what we're going to do next. I'm sure we'll figure it out.
Lots of options. And what do you think about like a virus episode because of this contagion? Would people want to hear that? Or would people be
I
don't want to hear
getting
that?
Weirdly, like, I legit keep getting people being like, oh, your students must be so excited that they're living through a real life horror movie.
Yeah.
And I just stare at people like, what the is anyone excited by this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just Maybe. I don't know. I just...
Yeah, like, congratulations. I heard your grandma's sick. You must be really happy about that. You must be
really happy.
As like, someone who is like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I just keep waiting. We're not going to talk about it. Okay. One thing, someone told me the other, like, 2 days ago or yesterday, they were like, I'm just really sick of, like, hearing about the quarantine. Like, yes, we know we're all in quarantine. Uh-huh. It's just... And I kind of agree with that, but
The other hand side of that coin is we're never hope maybe going to be in a quarantine again, so I might as well.
I was going to say I can't think of anything. I genuinely mean this. Probably the last time was maybe Kobe Bryant's death, maybe Michael Jackson's death. Mm-hmm. If anything, Michael Jackson's death more than Kobe Bryant's death, but maybe where like the whole world is suffering at once.
Yeah, this is some collective suffering here.
Yeah.
Bigger than those, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's always the most interesting part. We are always happy to get feedback from you all. So up on horrorspirit.com. That some people know exists. That stands
for commercial. .com.
Anyway, on horrorspirit.com, you can submit feedback on anything you may want to hear. Mm-hmm. We are going to figure out what to do. Hopefully, maybe in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have something up.
Yeah.
And, you know, just take care of each other. And,
yes.
Watch movies.
From a distance, perhaps.
Or not from a distance.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And support filmmakers and creatives in the service industry and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
This has been a great International Women's Month. I mean, pandemic aside.
I don't know what he's talking about, but happy International Women's Month to everyone. I think it is time for us to go watch the sunset now.
Oh. All right. The greatest horror movie of all is the horror of living another day in quarantine.
So that horrible outro was brought to you by Clinton. I want to say have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you another time.
See you next episode.